I'm so excited for our special guest, Chad Venters, on today's Speakeasy podcast. With over a decade of expertise in talent acquisition, Chad is currently the Vice President of Talent Acquisition at Dental Care Alliance. He excels in driving results through networking, sourcing, and referrals, while also advising and leading change in recruiting processes. Chad's dynamic approach and focus on aligning talent acquisition goals with business objectives makes him a valuable asset to his organization and the recruiting community. I am so excited to dive into the world of healthcare sourcing. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Chad.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. Super excited to be here and have a, you know, be a part of the podcast.
Awesome. Well, we met about a month ago down in California, and your background is super interesting. And I was like, I need to talk to Chad further. Can you share a little bit about your journey into the world of recruiting? Like, what initially sparked your interest and specifically focus in the dental space within recruiting?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? I started my career in the insurance and financial services world, spent 10 or 11 years in that industry, started as an agent, and then moved into recruiting and building agencies. So kind of unique, right? You know, you go from trying to find clients to trying to find people to help support clients. So I've always enjoyed that part of it, right? And I think that's really when I kind of took off. Because to me, you know, as an athlete, I got hurt in college, wasn't able to keep playing beyond the junior college that I was at. So I always wanted to go back to do something that kind of aligned to my sports background, right? And that's where recruiting kind of comes in. So, you know, for me, it started with the financial services part of it. I was doing all the recruiting. I was doing the training, the development, those kind of pieces. A lot of that is there's no salary. There's no anything. It's you're bringing people in, you're putting them on a path to really help them produce, meet clients, take care of clients, things like that. And then I got into healthcare recruiting in the dental space around 2014, 2015, and really kind of took off, right? I worked for another DSO at that time, did a lot of recruiting, a lot of events. So I covered parts of the Midwest, the Northeast, the Southwest. I would be in Boston one week and in Los Angeles another week. I love helping people. Now I'm fortunate to lead a team, and I can't say enough positive things about the team and that we have right now. So absolutely love that space. I know that's a lot of information, but that's kind of kind of how I ended up in recruiting and why I stay here.
How does the structure of dental recruiting teams differ from other industries that you've experienced? And why is it important to have distinct teams for specific doctors, hygienists, support staff?
The way I break it out is I like to think about sports. And I'm not a football person. I love watching football. They have quarterback, they have linebackers, they have offensive line, defensive line. Everybody kind of has their specialty that they really work in. So for me, that's what I try to do. And I think as you start in the support side, you're going to have more higher volume applicant flow. You're going to have those opportunities where it's going to be faster paced dealing with candidates and customers, our operations team, our clinical team. And then you move into hygienist. There's more sourcing that goes on, things like that, to where their time is still spent, still busy, but it's different. And then even further into the doctors on the dentist side and the specialist side. And it's just, for me, it's always been about aligning the skill sets. So where do people fit? How do we help create growth opportunities within the team? And those are things that we're looking at right now. But it's always been kind of just really aligning to what their skills are. Some people really like to be busy. Other people like to do more sourcing. And I think it really just, it takes it each, there's, in my opinion, having the people in the right seat on the bus is what ultimately leads to overall success of the team.
Is there any specific job functions that you have to lean more inbound versus outbound sourcing and recruiting methods?
Yeah, our outbound sourcing is really, really picked up on the hygiene and the doctor side. I think for us, we have to be proactive. I think the market is so competitive right now. I heard a statistic, and I think it said 70% of the time, the first person to offer wins. And so for us, having the biggest talent, the biggest database, right, getting to the candidates the fastest, building a relationship, and ultimately trying to identify what's important to them, what are their goals, whether it's a year, 3 years, 5 years, how can we help? And then how do we align them to the right practice that fits, you know, to help them grow in their career as well? So those are really the things that we try to hammer on.
What are the key challenges in recruiting in this specific dental industry?
Yeah, I would say the key challenges are we're facing the same thing that a lot of other, you know, people in the healthcare industry are facing, and there's just not enough providers to go around. So we've got to make sure that we're able to build those relationships, build that trust, and obviously find the candidates. I mean, there are some of our markets that are extremely tough to recruit in. And, you know, we may be looking for a specialist and there may only be 10 or 11 or 12 of them in the entire state. So we've got to be able to dive in and identify those folks. And it makes it tough, right? And I would say once we get somebody engaged, we're really good at, you know, identifying what their key motivators are, helping them move through the process, and then ultimately getting them to the end. And, you know, for me, a no today isn't a no forever, right? A no is a timing thing. And so for us, you know, with the limited market, we really want to focus on creating a very, very positive candidate experience, because we never know. They may come back, you know, they may go to another situation and come back in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months and say, hey, this isn't what they promised. You know, we want to have that conversation. So for us, candidate experience is a huge thing right now. And that's how we really try to overcome some of the shortages that we're seeing in certain markets.
Where do you find these specific niche profiles? like where are you teaching your recruiters and sourcers to find that specific talent in a rural area that only has 10 to 12 candidates?
Yeah. So for us, we go at this a couple different ways, right? Like we have a university team that helps kind of canvas those areas, but then we also utilize HireEasy at a very high level. I've implemented HireEasy 3 different times. And to me, when you think about the value and the ability and the access to information that you get from HireEasy, to me, that's invaluable, right? I mean, you can go in, you can run a search. We can identify candidates within that radius. If we don't find anybody in that radius, we can cascade out a little bit bigger. And then ultimately, we're trying to engage conversations. And there are times when we may not find anybody, but they are maybe a referral or whatever. And so that's really, for us, has been, you know, where a lot of our outbound sourcing has come from.
Why pick a specific partner like HireEasy in this space? Why does it suit you guys in the dental industry?
Yeah.
Is going on another platform? Are they not there, or is it the opportunity to reach out to them with their personal contact information? Like, what is it when you pick a partner to help your team succeed?
Yeah, I mean, for me, this comes back to efficiencies, right? Like anytime, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talent acquisition teams across the country that are running lean, and we're really no different, right? And so when you think about efficiencies, when you think about getting contact information, when you think about the accuracy of that information and just the availability, right? Those are big things. I don't like a lot of clicks. I want clean stuff. I want clean information. I want accurate information so that our team can be as efficient as possible. You know, a lot of our recruiters are handling anywhere from 18 to 25 recs on the doc side and, you know, 25 to 30 recs on the hygiene side. And then obviously the staff roles are higher. So the more efficient we can be, the better. I think ultimately the biggest thing that I've seen from HireEasy is the commitment to the customer. And I will say that I grew up in a small town. I'm a small town person. To me, relationships matter, right? And so when you have access to, you know, the co-founders and you can get feedback, you can share feedback. The other thing that I think is value add to me is they want the feedback. And when you think about, you know, creating a process, in theory, every process that somebody creates is going to be perfect. But if you're not willing to review and look for opportunities and see where there are, you know, opportunities to get better, right, then you're never going to ultimately get to the end result. And I think that's one of the things that really kind of pulls me to HireEasy is that they're always willing to take feedback. They're willing to adapt. And I'll give an example. Right now, we have asked for some information to be pulled there. Rather than us pulling it, HireEasy said, hey, as a partner, let us do that. We'll do the work for you. And, you know, to me, that's invaluable, especially as we look at running as lean as we possibly can.
You hit home on getting new talent into this industry and be kind of the first person to interact with those individuals that maybe are starting their career in the dental space. What specific initiatives or programs have your company done that is pretty effective in attracting and retaining new grads in the dental field?
Yeah, so the dental space is competitive, right? And again, you know, there's dental support organizations are viewed differently amongst different folks, right? And different, you're going to see that across the board. I feel like some dental schools are supportive, others may not be. For us, we understand that DSOs aren't for everybody. And so what we want to do is get to those folks that are looking for opportunities to grow. They're looking for opportunities to have mentorship. We have an awesome mentorship program that our university team is out talking to students all the time. We have another opportunity that will be coming out. I don't know if it's public, so I'll keep it to myself for right now. But for anybody that is outside of that two-year window that can fall into our mentorship program, there's also those opportunities to help them grow. And so I think that's it, right? I mean, I would say post-COVID, the talent market has changed tremendously in that we have to become an organization of development. And I think we're seeing that shift, which is super exciting. Obviously, there's other things with the benefits and all those things. But to me, it's about how do you impact somebody's life? How do you change their livelihood? And how can you impact their career? And I think we're doing a really, really good job of that with our mentorship program and then the other program that will be coming out very, very soon.
Walk me through what that mentorship program is. So you said 2 years into the field. Do other hospital systems, healthcare systems, do they have mentorship programs like that? And highlight a little bit about what that entails.
Yeah, so you'll see it in certain pockets, right? I think how it's delivered is ultimately going to be the difference, right? And so for us, our chief clinical officer is extremely involved. We have chief dental officers that are involved as well. So it gives us an added layer. And then we also have dental directors that are support that will be there to support as well. So there's going to be in-person training. There's going to be hands-on training. There's going to be continuing education that's available at obviously no cost. So like there's just a lot of opportunities to grow, to expand clinical skill sets and to have that support. I mean, anytime you're starting something new, you're always going to have questions, right? You're taking care of people. You want to do as good of a job as you possibly can. And having somebody maybe by your side to help you through some of those challenges early on while the dentists are getting comfortable, they're getting up to speed. And just really, how do you interact with the patients, right? I think having that is invaluable. So we really want to shorten their learning curve, be supportive, make sure they know that we're in this together. And that's really the biggest opportunity that I've seen. And the mentorship program is phenomenal.
It goes back to relationships and building that experience when working with your team. considering the significant investment in the campus recruiting and brand building and creating a positive candidate experience, what metrics, what indicators are used to measure the effectiveness of those initiatives within the dental industry, would you say?
Yes. I mean, we're looking at, I mean, in the dental industry, right? I mean, the revenue is pretty straight. It's pretty clean as to where it comes from. And so we're tracking how many new grads are we hiring year over year. We're tracking how many dentists are we hiring year over year. We're tracking how many, you know, specialty residents are we hiring year over year. And so ultimately what we're really trying to do is identify, right? And I think a lot of that comes back to data integrity on the source side, right? So we're looking at where did they come from? How did we get them? What helped them get over the hump? And so that's data that we've partnered with our analytics team on to make sure we have as clean as possible. Because a lot of these events, it's not an instant gratification thing. We talked to somebody a year ago or 2 years ago, and now they're coming back to us because they're in a decision-making standpoint. And so when you think about that, this is where I'll go back to a comment I made earlier about timing. This is now they're in decision-making time. So how do we get in front of them when they're in that situation? So I think that's where the relationship matters. And we really want to be that person they reach out to when they are ready to make a decision. So my belief has always been this: you take care of people, you treat people the way you want your children to be treated or your family to be treated, and everything will take care of itself. We have seen that really come back tenfold with the team that we have and with the candidates that we have in process. And that's evident by our starts and our fills and everything else. So that stays true throughout the entire process here.
You said a couple times that you like clean data and you follow the data to incorporate some strategies moving forward and more of a forward thinking. What are some notable trends or shifts in the dental recruiting landscape, particularly regarding the types of candidates being targeted and the methods that the candidates like or don't like?
Yeah, so I would say the biggest thing that we've had to shift is almost the ease of getting information, if that makes sense. I know that sounds very basic, but when you think about how people get information now, they have it at their fingertips. They can pay bills in a matter of seconds. They can look at their checking account. They can order tickets. They can do all those things. And so what we've really tried to do is create a situation where they can basically one click and apply. We focus a lot on that. We focus a lot on our application time, things like that. We recently removed the requirement to even have a resume, because at the end of the day, as a recruiter, we want to create an environment where it's easy for people to find out about opportunities we have. It's easy for them to get the information that they have. And so we've really tried to drive that. Going back to the metrics question, that's really coming from how many are we losing once they hit the site? What is an adequate time that should take for people to apply? So everything we look at is ultimately focused on driving candidate and customer experience. And I think that's essentially where, you know, we're really focusing a lot of time at, is just really cleaning up that piece of the puzzle.
Technology has reshaped how we approach recruiting. Yes. How has the dental industry within recruiting adapted to utilizing some of the things that we have in our fingertips, like AI and other technology, to really scale up processes and spend more time with the actual customer versus doing monotonous things?
Yeah, I think when you think about monotony, right, identifying candidates, and I remember, you know, I was trying to do 50 to 100 new touches a day and trying to drive candidate flow. And in reality, I really like talking to the candidates. That's where I get my energy from. So, you know, for us, we've really utilized technology from job descriptions to messaging for outreach in multiple areas. We're using AI for that. We're using technology to try to get to the candidates faster. Again, going back to the efficiency piece, that's huge for us. And I think it's interwoven across the entire experience, all the way from our ATS to the CRM components to our outbound sourcing components, like to our entire tech stack. You know, thinking about, you know, the best way to communicate. I mean, texting. In my opinion, texting is the best way to communicate. So, I mean, I think you'll see it kind of woven in across the entire process. And again, it's essentially allowing us to do the work of multiple people and be as efficient and clean as we possibly can.
Do you see like a sourcing strategy would be different to a 20-year vet in the industry versus maybe somebody that's 6 months to 3 years within the industry? And yeah, how is that different?
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of what we'll see is that person that's new is going to look for more mentorship opportunities, career development opportunities, you know, to grow and just become more comfortable from that skill set. That's going to be kind of their immediate look, where somebody who's in experience, they may be looking for partnership opportunities, ownership, growth, those kind of things. And so, you know, it's also a little bit different too, because as an organization, when you think about the impact, I mean, we may have an office where we've had somebody retire and has been there for 30 years, has an extremely high patient flow. And so we've got to really make sure that we're putting those candidates in the right fit or in the right opportunity. And so, you know, it's going to be different in how you approach that. I also think that's why I'll go back to my financial services industry and use a term called needs-based approach, because I think ultimately knowing what somebody wants, what their goals are, what's important to them is the key to being able to be really, really good at what we do. And putting them in the right office, the right opportunity. And, you know, I will hold true to that. I tell my team all the time, people will tell you what they want. all you've got to do is make sure you're asking the right questions, right? And then we can take them down that path, put them where they need to go. And I have an example I'll use, and this is going back a long time. I used to do a lot of events at Indiana University Dental School. I had a person that I talked to. I saw him at multiple events. Initially told me he wanted to be in the Indy area. Ultimately, I just said, what do you like to do? You know, he liked to hike. He liked to be outdoors. He liked to do all those things. He ended up going to an office in New Hampshire. And the last update I heard is he was absolutely tearing it up out there. Loved it. Great opportunity. But again, you don't get there if I don't find out what's important to him. And so that's the approach that we've always taken.
You hit on that you transitioned to one industry to another industry.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's a ton of recruiters in the market, and maybe they have to pivot to a different industry. I always thought that recruiting fundamentals are the same, but switching industries sometimes is a little different. What would you tell those individuals of best practices on how to convince maybe the hiring team to take a chance on them when they're not in that industry currently right now or have that experience, and how to best adapt to a specific different industry?
Yeah, I'll go back to, I adopted a needs-based approach a long time ago in the financial services industry because I was going from a property casualty background more into the investment side. And I had my license, but I didn't have the experience. And so for me, I was really trying to focus on how do I grow? How do I learn? How do I do all those things? What I would say is this. Number one, the candidate experience has to be first. The process has to be important. Talk about, there's nothing I look for more than somebody that can go out and find their own candidates. I mean, obviously we're going to have technology. We're going to have people that are going to apply, but how do you go out and find it? So talk about your sourcing plan. And then the other part of it is do your homework. Go into that with, it's a different industry, go in and do research around what the organization does, what the type of roles are that they're going to be filling. Go to their career page, look up the jobs that they have posted, be able to discuss that. Because to me, if you haven't done your homework and somebody else has, that immediately drops you below them. The other thing that I always look for is personality type. Like I want, you know, I go back, I like open, positive, and flexible, right? This industry is going to change. The role's going to change, you know, and you know how it is, as you have somebody who's a negative Nancy about everything. It just pulls everybody down. We're going to go through ups and downs. But the thing that I try to get our team to do is control the controllables. That's, we can control our outreach. We can control how we treat our candidates. We control how we treat our customers, which when you take care of your customers, you fill in the gaps. Even if it's not good news, you have happy people. They know your work and they know all those things. And so those are the things that I really like and would recommend is really just doing your homework, making sure you speak to the candidate experience, how you can identify candidates, how you can find candidates. Like that, those things to me are invaluable.
I love how you said those three things. I always approach in anything of controlling the three A's, and that's attitude, activity, and then what's your aspirations. If you have all those three aligned every single day, those are controllable things that you can be positive. You can control your attitude. You can control your activity. Who's working harder, smarter, who's better than you, and you need to get better than everybody else. And then aspirations. What are the goals ahead that you're trying to achieve? Because if there's nothing driving you, those first two are not going to mean anything. So those three A's, I always taught my team and my personal approach to just life in general. So it's cool to see. You've likely encountered various leadership styles. And maybe for the listeners don't know, you are a coach. And I think coaching and leadership go hand in hand. Walk me through that experience on switching over to the leadership side of talent acquisition. And what different components do you leverage from your coaching experience to coach and develop and lead your specific teams?
So I coach a 14U travel baseball team. I've been fortunate to do this. I probably learn more from them than I do from me. So when you think about how do you, as an athlete, how do you perform at your highest and at your best? And I think most athletes, you know, you've had the coaches that were extremely hard and they yelled and they screamed and they pushed. And you've had the alternative, which is they kind of acted like they didn't care. They just kind of let you do your thing. And at times you wonder, did they really care? And so for me, I've really focused on trying to think and develop what I call psychological safety. And I would say that is the biggest thing that I focused on, not only as a coach, but also as a leader in this industry, because I think they're very similar. Baseball is a game of failure. Recruiting is a game of failure. How do you overcome those? How do you continue to move forward? And then how do we create that safety where it's okay? It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to do something wrong and whatever, because at the end of the day, what I want is I want their best. I want their best every day. I'm going to ask them to be away from their families. I'm going to ask them to do things at times that they maybe don't want to do. And honestly, I may not want to do, but we have a commitment to this organization to drive results. Just like on my team, we have a commitment to drive results. You know, and so for me, that's where I go back to controlling the controllables, right? I ask my team to focus on the outreach. And again, when you think about psychological safety, when somebody focuses on a result as opposed to the action to get to the result, I now create stress. I can't control whether somebody signs. I can't control what some other company offers, but I can control how many candidates we're putting in the process. How many are we getting to our dental directors? How many are we getting over to our hygiene advisors? We can control that. right? Now, getting them across the finish line may be another story, but if I only focus on the end result, I now create stress on my team. And when I create stress on my team, my results lag. And so I would say I pull a lot of that from our kids as well, because it all kind of goes hand in hand. I want our kids to be okay with failing, just like I want my team to be okay with failing. I read a book a long time ago called Go for No. The premise of the book is essentially, rather than seeking the yeses, and this is back in the days of cold calling to set appointments in the insurance and financial services world, it was really around looking for the no. Rather than saying, hey, I want 10 yeses, it was like, hey, I want 30 no's. So even if you get a no, it's okay, because you're okay with that. Because in your mind, it's allowing you that safe space to get a no, and it's okay. Because so many times, a no is a rejection, and it's hard, and we take it the wrong way, just like a failure. And so like those are the things that I really tried to drive on, is just creating a psychologically safe space where my athletes and my team can perform at the highest level possible. Man, I'll say this, that kind of hit me a little bit. I apologize for that. But, you know, our team is, I mean, we're right now number two in the state of Illinois. We're getting ready to go play in Houston, Texas this weekend. I'm excited. We got a good group. But man, I'm equally excited about the team that I have at work too. Like, we have a phenomenal team. We have a lot of consistency. Is it easy? No. But day in and day out, right? Like, I'm going to listen to them. I'm going to let them drink. I'm going to let them share their frustrations, because I think ultimately that's what matters. They want to feel heard. They want to feel like they have influence. They want to feel like they have a seat at the table. And that's my job. My job is, I believe in servant leadership. And I think by doing that, there's times I'm going to tell them hard no, like, just can't do it. But at the end of the day, they're going to be like, okay, that makes sense, because I know nine other times you've been able to help, right? And so I think that's the piece for me. It's like, I want that feedback. I want to know what they're feeling, what their struggles are, you know, where their frustrations are. Because I think that helps from a team building standpoint. I think it helps build job satisfaction. And I think it creates stability. And in this space, when you create stability, you create results. Because again, it's relationships based. And I believe very, very strongly in that.
Who taught you that core values and that way of thinking to develop leaders on your team versus followers, and really embracing the team versus putting it, you know, the we versus me mentality and giving back? Who's that one leader that comes to mind that really taught you that?
I grew up in a blue collar house. I mean, so my dad worked 46 years at the same job. He was very selfless. And that was reinforced for me into college with my college coach. And then for me, what I've always tried to do is look back and say, okay, how can I draw on my past experience and how can I help grow, right? I do look, or like, I follow some folks too around leadership and how do you create this space and how do you do those things? And I'll be honest with you, naturally, like, I feel like I've kind of just started to adapt and evolve over time. I know what leadership styles I work really well with and what leadership styles I don't work well with. What I've always tried to do is identify, and my college coach said this, he said, you've got to know the ones that you can pat on the back to get the best and the ones that you can ride like a mule. And I feel like in any environment, you're going to have the ones where they're going to be very direct. They're going to push. They're going to do those things. And I've got to manage them a little bit differently than the ones who are going to say, hey, I apologize. I did this. I did that. Right. And so it's like, it's really identifying the personality, identifying what's important to them. And I think the people element side is huge, because again, like, I show emotion sometimes, not intentional, because stuff is important to me. I value that. I will show raw side. Like, I think it's okay to be vulnerable. And I think in an environment where so many people are not, it just makes it tough. I think that people side, but I would say this goes all the way back to my parents and the way I was raised and watching my dad work 6 days a week to make sure I was able to do the travel baseball and things like that. So it's, it probably started the foundation there, because I felt like you're always part of a family. We ate dinner together. We did everything kind of together. And so that's probably where that foundation started. It was reinforced in college, and then it's just continued to evolve.
Love it. Let's switch over to the quick fire questions as we wrap up. What is your favorite recruiting tool, or what is your team utilizing to attract and find these hard to fill roles?
I mean, that's a pretty simple answer. That's higher easy for us.
What is your go-to interview question that has been proven effective in assessing candidates?
I would say for me, favorite question is probably just saying, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself. What's important to you? What are your goals in a year, 3 years, 5 years? Tell me what you want to do. And then just continuing to expand off of that. Because they're going to tell me where they want to be, what they want to do, what their career goals are, et cetera. They're going to tell me about their family, their friends, where they want to be. And that essentially allows me to kind of frame the rest of my conversation.
Any specific tips, practices that you've taught your team on how to be a recruiter in the dentist space?
Yeah, I would say this. I'm big on consistency. Be consistent, develop a plan, pull your hiring leaders in close. But the one thing that I've always tried to follow, and this comes from Racker certification for any Racker fans out there, through, it used to be Lean Human Capital, I think it's changed now, but it's called ETF, Eat the Frog. Whatever is going to cause you the most stress, do that the first thing in the morning. The other thing I would advise is staying active, finding ways to reduce stress, stepping away from your desk, those things. But like, those are the things that I really push my team on. is taking time for themselves and eating a frog first thing in the morning, because it allows you to work and focus the rest of the day.
If you reflect on your career, what is the proudest accomplishment that you've had so far?
I would say, just like anybody out there that's went through COVID in this space, I've probably continued to fail forward. I think I've stayed true to myself. I've stayed true to who I am. I found people, and I try to surround myself with people that I can build those relationships with and the trust with. But I think for me, that's probably the most important thing. And every team that I've led has had an impact on what I've done. They've had an impact on my career. They're still a valuable piece of what I've done and extremely important, even if I don't talk to them. If any of them call and say, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? Like, I'll do whatever. And I want my folks to always know that. I would say right now, the team that we've got right now at DCA, last year was tough. I mean, it was white knuckled. It was tough, right? The pressure was high. The results we got were really good. I mean, and unofficially, I want to say we were around 40% year over year in starts and hygienists in 2023 versus 2022. And we were just under 30% in starts for doctors in 2023 versus 2022. So in the environment we were in, we had some internal opportunities and challenges, but that's probably, for me, the response with that team is probably the most proud accomplishment that I've seen to date.
Awesome. As we wrap it up, any last minute things that you want to tell the audience?
Man, I would say this. At the end of the day, I value work-life balance. My family means the world to me. You've got them for 18 years. Take the time. Work's going to be there the next day. Stay committed, build a schedule, and stay really true to it, right? I think being consistent, being involved, but ultimately understanding that people want to be treated the way you want to be treated. Take care of your candidates. Take care of your customers. Don't stop networking. And, you know, I'm extremely passionate about this stuff. So I can't say thank you enough for giving me the opportunity to be on here.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chad, for joining us on the Speakeasy podcast today. Your insights into the ever-evolving landscape of talent acquisition have been truly enlightening. From discussing the impact of technology to navigating the challenges of outbound recruiting efforts in the dental industry, your wealth of experience and expertise have been proven time and time again that putting people first is what matters the most. So we greatly appreciate your time and expertise. And for our audience, if you're interested in learning more about Chad, feel free to connect with him on LinkedIn. And if you are looking for other resources, feel free to look and tap the links below into our Upon Recruiting Academy community and everything else that HireEasy has to offer.